The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Jackie Roble for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Nutrition News. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from the Nutrition Action Health Letter. Our Best Shot, an interview with Dr. Anthony Fauci. In mid-December, when COVID-19 was killing 3,000 Americans a day, the Pfizer vaccine started reaching the arms of healthcare workers, and the Moderna vaccine wasn't far behind. Dr. Anthony Fauci spoke about its safety and effectiveness and how to combat vaccine hesitancy with CSPI President Dr. Peter Lorre. Hi, Tony. Thanks so much for doing this. Let's jump right in. How do you feel about the rapid development of these vaccines? Peter, I believe strongly that this is truly a historic scientific accomplishment to go from the identification of a brand new pathogen in January 2020 to not only having a safe and highly effective vaccine, but one that's already being administered to people in about 11 months. This is beyond precedented. If this were a decade ago or even 5 years ago, it would have taken several years at best. Would some people say that the speed was reckless? It has nothing to do with recklessness. It's the application of extraordinary scientific advances which have allowed us to do things in months that would have otherwise taken years. In addition, it's due to an extraordinary investment on the part of the government, due to the tune of billions of dollars, to pre-purchase vaccines prior to the time that companies even demonstrated that they're safe and effective, which means that you're taking a financial risk. If the vaccine works, you've saved many months. If the vaccine doesn't work, you've lost a lot of money. The decision was made. Let's gamble with the money to see if we can save time. So when people express skepticism or concern about getting vaccinated because they feel it was done too quickly, it is important to explain that speed did not compromise safety or scientific integrity. Do you have any concerns about the FDA's approval of the Pfizer vaccine? I was watching it like a hawk, and I can tell you it was done in an entirely appropriate manner. The data from the trials were given to a data safety and monitoring board, which is completely independent of the government, the drug company, and the FDA. This board is a group of scientists, vaccinologists, immunologists, virologists, and statisticians who look at the data, and they determined that at a certain point it was clear that the vaccine was safe and effective. They then allowed the company to see the data, which the company analyzed, then submitted to the FDA to consider whether to approve the vaccine for an emergency use or for an outright licensure. The career scientists, not political appointees, at the FDA carefully scrutinized the data, and then the Vaccine and Related Biological Products Advisory Committee recommended that the FDA issue an emergency use authorization. Each of these steps occurred according to the way it should have occurred. And an EUA was granted, and now the vaccine is being distributed. Skepticism is understandable, but what happened is a very clear, transparent, and independent process. We need to keep explaining that in a clear, concise way so that people understand. How was the vaccine's effectiveness determined? By state-of-the-art gold standard randomized placebo-controlled trials. With the Pfizer vaccine, the trial included 44,000 people. With the Moderna vaccine, it was 30,000. And at the end of the trials, it was shown that when you compare the number of clinically recognizable infections in the placebo versus the vaccine group, the vaccines were 94 to 95% effective, which in the world of vaccines is about as good as it gets. Did effectiveness vary by age, sex, race, or any other criteria? We monitor this very carefully. About a third of the subjects in the Pfizer trial were aged 18 to 65 and healthy. A third were aged 18 to 65 with underlying conditions, and a third were older than 65. And when you look at the data, it looks like the vaccine was effective across all of the groups, elderly, younger, and those with or without underlying conditions like obesity, hypertension, and diabetes, although you didn't have enough people to do statistical tests on each of those groups. What we don't know until we give the vaccine to millions of people is how effective it's going to be, for example, people who are immune suppressed or on cancer chemotherapy or other treatments that modify the immune system. What side effects have you seen? Let's divide them into two buckets, what we call reactogenicity, which is what you get within 24 hours, sometimes within a couple of hours, and then the serious adverse events that could occur after weeks or beyond. The Pfizer vaccine had reactogenicity that you might expect of a vaccine that elicits a strong immune response. Pain in the arm, some swelling, some muscle aches, fatigue, sometimes fever. They last generally between 24 and 36 hours, and they're alleviated very nicely by something like Tylenol. We saw a significant amount of those reactions, which was not unexpected. There were no serious adverse events that were red flags when the vaccine was rolled out in the UK in early December. However, two individuals there did have serious allergic reactions, anaphylactic-like reactions. Those reactions can be life-threatening because they make you unable to breathe. Yes, both had a significant history of severe allergic reactions. So Pfizer said, if you have a history of anaphylactic reactions to the ingredients in the vaccine, definitely don't get vaccinated. And if you have a history of anaphylactic reactions to anything else, get vaccinated in the presence of someone or a facility that can handle a reaction. If you have contact dermatitis or get mild allergic reactions to food or something else, you need not be concerned. In the Pfizer trial, there were also a few cases of Bell's palsy in the vaccine group. That's a usually temporary weakness or paralysis of muscles in the face. However, the incidence was no greater than what you would see in the general population, regardless of vaccination. So the statisticians feel that Bell's palsy is not associated with the vaccine. The bottom line is that, apart from a couple of allergic reactions in people who had a strong history of allergic reactions, the safety profile looks very good. Could other adverse effects show up later? There is the possibility that you might have a serious consequence of the vaccine that you didn't see in the first few weeks. However, the FDA has looked at all of the adverse events that were reported in essentially all the vaccines they've ever approved, and they found that well over 90%+ occur within the first 30 to 40-odd days after the vaccination. What might those long-term effects be? They're mostly neurological, like a Guillain-Barré-type syndrome, transverse myelitis, Bell's palsy. It's a very, very rare that they occur far out. But we've got that to be alert that they are possible, even though they're extremely rare events. Why are some people afraid of the vaccine? It's complicated. Some people are anti-vaxxers, and no matter what you tell them, they do not want to be pressured into getting a vaccine. But a far greater proportion of people might be hesitant or reluctant based on false information that they received, usually through social media. We saw that very clearly with people reluctant to take measles vaccines because of the misinformation that it's associated with autism, which is clearly not the case. And once you show people the data, more often than not, you get them to reconsider. Can you speak to the concerns in the African American community? Yes, there's a mistrust on the part of the African American community for any medical intervention, particularly one that's being pushed by the government, which we are doing now because it's our responsibility to end this outbreak. When you look at the history of the relationship between the African American population and the government's health programs, the first thing that comes to mind is the disgraceful Tuskegee study decades ago, where African American men with syphilis were allowed to go untreated just to watch the progression of their pathogenesis of the infection. That is terrible and should never have happened, and hopefully will never happen again, given the safety guidelines that we now have about clinical research. But that's something that sticks in people's minds. So we've got to convince them that what we're doing is for their own individual health, their family's health, and importantly, the health of society. What would you say to a family member of yours who is reluctant to take the vaccine? First of all, I wouldn't denigrate them or make it like they don't know what they're talking about because that's the easiest way to shut somebody out. Then I would try to get a feel for why they are reluctant, and then I'd go step by step, explaining why that concern might be understandable, but not justifiable. Do people who get vaccinated still need to wear a mask? Yes, they will, until the overwhelming majority of the population is vaccinated and there's no virus circulating in society. When you get some of the population vaccinated, but not as much as you need, and the level of infection goes way down, you don't have to worry as much as we do now. But as long as there's some infection in the community, you have to have some degree of wearing masks, avoiding crowds, avoiding getting close to people. Is that because people who get the vaccine could still infect others? Yes. The trials determined that the vaccines are 95% effective at preventing symptomatic disease, but they didn't look at protecting against asymptomatic infection. It's possible you could be protected against symptomatic disease, but still have enough virus in your nose and throat to replicate. Hence, by definition, you are infected, and you might be able to infect others. Until we know the answers to those questions, about other trials, even people who get the vaccine should wear masks and keep a distance from others. Will we ever go back to normal? I would like to say that we will have such a good collective memory that we'll be really careful about respiratory-borne illnesses, particularly in the winter. That is, people will avoid crowded places and might feel comfortable wearing a mask, as so many people in Asian countries do all winter. They do it as a courtesy, not to infect someone else, and as well to protect themselves. Quite frankly, given my experience with how you forget things after they're behind you, I think the everyday man and woman on the street will probably go back to the way things were before, with a little more attention to the fact that we could have another outbreak. Quick studies. A snapshot of the latest research on diet, exercise, and more. Keeping diabetes at bay. What's the best way to keep pre-diabetes from becoming type 2 diabetes? Scientists, partly funded by the food industry, had 2,223 people with pre-diabetes lose at least 8% of their initial weight with a very low-calorie diet for 8 weeks, then randomly assigned them to one of the two diets, high-protein, low-glycemic index, or GI, or moderate-protein, moderate GI. Carbohydrates with a low GI lead to a smaller spike in blood sugar. After 3 years, only 3% of the people in each group had been diagnosed with diabetes. The only difference? Blood sugar levels in those on the high-protein, low-GI diet were less likely to drop to the normal range. What to do? To stave off diabetes, lose excess weight. The eyes don't need it. Age-related macular degeneration, or AMD, is a leading cause of vision loss in U.S. adults. Researchers randomly assigned roughly 25,000 adults to take vitamin D, 2,000 IUs, fish oil, 1,000 milligrams, both, or a placebo every day for 5 years. The supplements had no impact on whether AMD occurred or got worse. What to do? Don't rely on vitamin D or fish oil to protect your eyes. THC behind the wheel. THC, the intoxicating component of marijuana, impairs driving. Does CBD, the non-intoxicating component, counteract THC's psychoactive effects, as some claim? Scientists had 26 young adults vape, or inhale, THC, CBD, THC plus CBD, or a placebo on different days. Each dose of THC or CBD was 13.75 milligrams. After 40 to 100 minutes, and again after 4 to 5 hours, the volunteers drove for an hour at 60 miles per hour. Relax, the car had a second set of pedals for the research team. Compared to the placebo, lane weaving, swerving, and overcorrection during the first drive were worse after both the THC and the THC plus CBD, but not after just the CBD. No differences were seen after 4 or 5 hours. What to do? Don't expect CBD to make THC safe for driving. And the THC in edibles, like gummies or brownies, takes longer to wear off than inhaled THC because it takes longer to reach the bloodstream. A Mediterranean diet and ED. Can a Mediterranean diet help prevent erectile dysfunction, or ED? Researchers tracked 21,469 men aged 40 to 75 for 11 years. They calculated Mediterranean diet scores by adding points for vegetables, beans, fruits, nuts, grains, fish, and polyunsaturated rather than saturated fats, and by subtracting points for red meat and dairy. Compared to men with a low Mediterranean diet score, those with a high score had a 22% lower risk of ED if they were under age 60 and an 18% lower risk if they were 60 to 69. For men age 70 or older, the difference in ED risk wasn't quite statistically significant. What to do? This kind of study can't prove that a Mediterranean diet prevents ED, but that or a similar diet is worth eating to protect all of your blood vessels. And now a recipe with the healthy cook, Kate Sherwood. To keep things interesting, try this classic Moroccan chicken dish with curry powder or ras el hanout instead of paprika and coriander. Bulgur tabbouleh makes a great pairing. Chicken tagine serves 4. Ingredients: 1 tablespoon plus 2 tablespoons extra virgin olive oil, 1.5 pounds bone-in skinless chicken thighs or breasts, 1 large onion, chopped, 3 cloves garlic, minced, 1 tablespoon grated ginger, 2 tablespoons tomato paste, 1 teaspoon paprika, 1/2 teaspoon coriander, 3 carrots chopped, 1/2 pound small zucchini chopped, 2 cups chicken or vegetable stock, homemade is best, 1 tablespoon lemon zest, 2 tablespoons fresh lemon juice, and 1/2 teaspoon kosher salt, freshly ground black pepper to taste. In a large heavy pot, heat 1 tablespoon oil over medium heat until shimmering. Sauté the chicken until browned, 2 to 3 minutes per side. Remove from the pot. Add the remaining 2 tablespoons oil. Sauté the onion until lightly browned, 3 to 5 minutes. Stir in the garlic, ginger, tomato paste, and spices. Cook, stirring for 1 minute. Add the carrots, zucchini, stock, and lemon zest. Bring to a boil over high heat. Reduce the heat to low. Return the chicken with any juices to the pot. Cover and gently braise until the chicken is fully cooked, 20 to 30 minutes. Season with the lemon juice, salt, and pepper. Dish of the month, bulgur tabbouleh. Toss 2 cups cooked bulgur with 1/4 cup chopped parsley or cilantro, 1/4 cup toasted almonds, 1/4 cup diced dried apricots, 1 tablespoon extra virgin olive oil, 2 teaspoons lemon juice, and 1/4 teaspoon kosher salt. Serves 4. Food find. Oat, yes. It's hot, whole grain, and sticks to your ribs. It's cheap and less processed than most cereals. It starts out free of added sugars and plays well with nuts, spices, and fruit. You can write an ode to oatmeal. Too late. Bob's Red Mill, the Shakespeare of whole grains, beat you to it. All it takes is 5 to 10 minutes in the microwave or on the stovetop, and you're ready to dig into Bob's love song to an old standby. Verse 1, Oat Bran Hot Cereal. Think of it as an uber-creamy cream of wheat that's full of fiber. 1/4 of a day's worth per serving. Verse 2, extra thick rolled oats. Each oat is rolled extra thick for folks who like their oatmeal extra hearty, says Bob. Verse 3, quick cooking steel-cut oats. Steel-cut oats are chopped into larger pieces that cook up chewier in a good way. The downside, at least 20 minutes of simmering. Bob's are chopped smaller, yet they're no less satisfying. Cooking time, 7 minutes or so. Not a fan of naked oats? Dress your oats up with oldies but goodies like cinnamon, raisins, and walnuts. Or try fresh fruit, apples, pears, berries, nut butter. Rest a spoonful on top of your hot oats until it gets all melty and drizzly. Or nutrient-packed seeds, chia, pumpkin, hemp. So many looks, so little time. Cinna Bummer, food fail. Enjoy our new twist on breakfast with these craveable sweet and savory breakfast products made at home, says Cinnabon's website. Who isn't looking for new breakfast products, especially ones like Cinnabon's breakfast creations, which are frozen so you can make, that is, heat them up, at home? And what creations they are. Take the caramel pecan ooey gooey rolls. Each one packs 510 calories, 9 teaspoons of added sugars, which is 3/4 of a day's worth, and 1/3 of a day's saturated fat. You might as well eat 10 Oreos for breakfast. The roll's 3 dozen ingredients include white flour, corn syrup, high fructose corn syrup, sugar, margarine, palm oil, and artificial flavors. Pecans? Last on the list, but somehow right there in the name. The smaller, frosting-filled Cinna pastries bump up the saturated fat to 1/2 day's worth thanks to the cream cheese frosting, with more sugar and margarine than cream cheese. Yum! Then there's the Cinna Biscuit Chicken Sandwich, with its cinnamon sauce, mainly brown sugar, water, sugar, and corn syrup, and cream cheese frosting chips, largely sugar and palm oil. Celebrating the simple pleasures that make life sweeter, says Cinnabon. They sure nailed that sweeter part. Think Fast, Healthy Shortcuts to Make Vegetables a Snap, by Kate Sherwood and Lindsay Moyer. Thanks to COVID-19, we're doing more eating and likely more cooking at home. Need a break from peeling, chopping, shredding, and slicing? Here are 10 healthy vegetable shortcuts that save you time in the kitchen. Broccolini. Why it's a shortcut. This cross between regular and Chinese broccoli is tender from floret to tip. That means you don't need to trim the stalks. No broccolini? Use a bag of broccoli florets. Rice cauliflower. Why it's a shortcut? Going from a head of fresh cauliflower to a pile of crumbles or rice means chopping, then blitzing the florets and stems in the food processor. But you can open and saute a refrigerated bag of cauli rice in minutes. Frozen rice cauliflower has a softer texture. Save it for making mashed cauliflower. Matchstick cut carrots. Why they're a shortcut? Using matchstick, aka grated carrots, means no need to slice or shred your own. Another shortcut? For this recipe, look for pre-cooked, refrigerated lentils like Trader Joe's or Melissa's. A lemon mustard, carrots, and lentils is just whisking together 3 tablespoons extra virgin olive oil, 2 tablespoons fresh lemon juice, 2 tablespoons whole grain mustard, 1 tablespoon of minced capers, 1/2 teaspoon honey, and 1/4 teaspoon kosher salt. Toss with a 10-ounce bag matchstick carrots, about 2.5 cups, and 2 cups cooked lentils. Napa cabbage. Why it's a shortcut? Compared to shredding a dense, wobbly head of standard green or red cabbage, delicate Napa is a breeze. Halve lengthwise, then slice each half into thin ribbons crosswise. Another shortcut? Try with bagged shredded red or green cabbage or coleslaw mix instead of Napa. Broccoli slaw. Why it's a shortcut? These crunchy broccoli stems show up ready for slaw, so you don't have to grate them or waste them. Carrots and red cabbage add coleslaw's signature color and crunch. Cooked beets. Who doesn't love beets? But not everyone loves cooking and peeling them. Companies like Love Beets and Melissa's turn the root veggie into fast food. Plus, an unopened vacuum pack of cooked beets lasts for months in the fridge. Frozen artichoke hearts. When's the last time you steamed a fresh artichoke? We thought so. Frozen hearts to the rescue. Just defrost in the microwave or thaw overnight in the fridge. And with frozen, you dodge the added sodium in canned chokes. Nice. Bagged baby greens. You don't need to de-stem pre-washed baby greens like arugula, spinach, or kale. And you can toss any leftovers into your next sauté. Tip, don't rewash them. You risk contaminating the greens with bugs from your sink. Cubed butternut squash. Having and peeling a hefty butternut squash takes a sharp knife and nerves of steel. So we'll often grab a container of squash cubes from the refrigerator case. Making a pureed soup? Try starting with frozen butternut squash. Frozen peas. Frozen peas go from package to plate in minutes, but they're a keeper for lots of reasons. Unless it's springtime, frozen peas are as close to fresh taste and texture as you're going to get. Plus, they're an easy way to bulk up your meal with an extra 4 grams of fiber and 5 grams of protein in every 60-calorie half cup. Gotta love legumes. Hold the Booze, the latest non-alcoholic libations by Lindsay Moyer. Cutting calories? Taking the dry challenge? Signing up for designated driver? These drinks are less than a 0.5% alcohol, according to labeling rules. Heads up, some cost as much as the real thing, and some may be easier to find online. Hopped Up. Hop Tea calls itself tea brewed like craft beer and means it. The calorie-free sparkling tea is infused with hops like Citra or Mosaic. Those are the flowers that give IPAs their citrusy bitter notes. But a 16-ounce IPA can set you back 250 calories. Not a tea drinker? Try H2 Hop Sparkling Hop Water. Cheers! Athletic Brewing caters to enthusiasts who long for the taste of craft suds, but sans alcohol. A 12-ounce can of its Upside Dawn has lots of hoppy flavor, yet only 50 calories from carbs. That's better than the 60 to 90 calories in most other non-alcoholic beers, and way better than the 150 in, say, a 12-ounce Bud. Craving a Bud Light? New Budweiser Zero nails it, yet still manages to shave the calories from 110 to 50. Just a Splash. Traditional bubbly drinks are sweet. A cup of Martinelli sparkling cider, for example, has 140 calories and 7.5 teaspoons of juice sugars. But sparkling Spindrift sticks to a splash of real squeezed fruit, so a 12-ounce blackberry, cranberry, raspberry, or other refreshing flavor has no more than 20 calories. Of course, you can always do it yourself with a cup of seltzer, plus an ounce of fresh squeezed lime juice or fruit juice. Zero proof. Seed Lip is a distilled non-alcoholic spirit. 2 ounces of the Garden 108, herbal, Grove 42, citrus, or Spice 94, aromatic and spicy, have 0 calories. They're subtle, though. Add more than a splash of seltzer or tonic, and the flavors start to fade. For low-cal knockoffs of rum, gin, etc., try Liars, that's L-Y-E-R, apostrophe S. To dodge food dyes, skips the absinthe, Italian orange, and Italian spritz flavors. Mix it up. Whether your spirits are 0 proof or 80 proof, skip the sugary mixers. A typical tonic water like Canada Dry is nearly as much sugar as Coke, but Fever Tree slashes the sugar in its refreshingly light line by simply adding less. For example, a 7-ounce light Indian tonic water has just 6 grams, or 1.5 teaspoons of added sugar, and 30 calories, without the saccharin or aspartame that's in many brands of diet tonic. Sweet! Teetotaler. Unlike many mocktails, spirity cocktails doesn't overpower its spirits distilled from tea with sugar. The Mindful Negroni, with just 30 calories and 1.5 teaspoons of added sugar, came closest to its namesake. Who needs Campari? To save a few bucks, skip Spirity's Mindful Mule and add a squeeze of lime to a Fever Tree refreshingly light ginger beer for just 40 calories. We've run out of time for today's episode of Nutrition News. Be sure to listen next time. We hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Jackie Roble, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Nutrition News is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.